We're back for another episode of Keep It. I can't wait to talk about Black Panther with Kara and Lewis, but later in the show, I will be joined by Los Angeles Times reporter Travel Anderson, and we'll have a discussion about diversity in entertainment journalism. I want to thank Kara for being here.
Okay.
And Frederick Douglass is sitting in for Lewis this week.
Hi, girl.
All right.
That was my Freddie impression.
Nice Frederick Douglass mask.
Mm-hmm.
Can I also
you got away with it.
We're recording today on Rihanna's birthday,
aka
the real President's Day.
Speaking of President's Day, though, there was this meme going around, which is a definite keep it. I'm doing it very early. I'll have more stuff to say keep it to later. But did you see the meme going around that said, on President's Day, we're celebrating the other 44 presidents and not the 45th one? And I get the sentiment, but...
Oh, like they were flawless. Like, oh yeah, Warren Harding. Definitely want him up in my
Andrew
holidays.
Andrew Jackson.
Let's celebrate the slave-owning 9/11 starting.
Yeah. I'm going to go with celebrating three. I'm going to go with George Abraham and Barry.
And Gina Davis on the show Commander-in-Chief, which was on in 2005.
And maybe Fitz. Mm-hmm. He was terrible, but I, you know.
You know, I'm glad he came back.
Oh, yeah, and Scandal. We're talking about Scandal.
We're talking about Scandal.
Right,
Olivia's out of her goddamn mind.
Olivia loves
anyway, us,
right?
We cannot start talking about Scandal because we have so many other black excellent things.
Some other
to
black
get
queens
into.
To talk about.
I mean, before we even get into Black Panther, one of my favorite queens, Janelle Monáe, is back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's back. She teased Dirty Computer, her new album. And she also is on the cover of W Magazine, styled by Jordan Peele, because they did covers by three of the people who were nominated for Best Director Oscars. And she loves a suit.
Loves a menswear look.
She's in menswear. It's noir. And I kind of wish it were a movie.
I'm not sure about the title of this album, I gotta say.
Dirty Computer?
Because I'm like, I don't understand.
It does seem to be quintessentially her, though.
Sounds like a Justin Timberlake song.
Like, well, Sensual Cyborg is her brand.
Right, but is the computer, like, smudged? Is the hard drive dirty? I don't understand. Like, that is not a phrase I'm familiar with.
Yeah,
dirty computer.
You want Windex. You want to, like, what's wrong
with
it?
I don't understand. I'm sure it'll be great.
It'll make sense.
Right now, I don't get it.
Yeah, you know.
But she's the future, so it's on, you know, I'm the dum-dum who doesn't understand what's about to be happening.
It's fine. She's gorgeous. I just wanted to stan her briefly before we jump into... All right, Black Panther. It's here. We've seen it. If you have not seen Black Panther yet, then you might want to jump ahead to avoid spoilers. I saw it with Kara.
Yeah.
My second time seeing it.
That was my
we
second
went
time.
Together
yeah.
Friday night in our best Wakandan gear.
Chadwick was there.
Yeah.
Ryan Coogler was there. It was...
The Princess Amunda was there.
Everyone was dressed up. It was like the most... It honestly, like, not to... Because I feel like people are talking about Black Panther and superlatives, and it does warrant them. But the last time I saw that many happy black people had to be when Barack Obama was elected. Black people have not been that thrilled for anything since then. Like, people were dressed up, and everyone was so excited and taking pictures. And it was like, just, it was, I don't know, it's Barack Obama and Black Panther at this point.
It was beautiful. It just felt like a moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I was asked recently in an interview about why this was so big and like people were, you know, coming out in these outfits and everything. And I'm like, white people do it all the time.
All the time.
Star Wars.
You invented dressing up for this shit. I'm pretty sure you're the first ones who were dropping thousands of dollars for like some quote unquote real Superman suit. And it's like, it's not real. So it's. The accuracy doesn't really matter when this person is fake. They've been doing this forever.
And there are great black cosplayers all the time that you see at Comic-Con and stuff. But it was nice to see people, you know, who probably don't even know what cosplay is. Just being like, I'm dressing up in my best Wakandan garb. They want it to look great. And it was
regal.
Fun. The movie itself is amazing.
I would say it's the first superhero movie I've seen that... after it's over, seems to vibrate off you in the way, because there's such a feel to the movie, a vibe, if you will. I felt like there's like a dichotomy. It's at once constantly intense, and then also there's a constant sensitivity about it. Mm-hmm. So it just feels like its own very specific world, and I feel like in that way it succeeds where I thought Wonder Woman failed, which was the world they come from. Wakanda is so well established. I thought the world where Wonder Woman came from felt like a computer game where, you know, women are like doing Xena cosplay everywhere. You know, this feels like its own specific, lived in, well filmed universe. I can't compare it to anything else other than the Together Again video by Janet Jackson. I have no comparison.
No, it felt like a culture.
Yeah.
Like a culture that you sort of immediately even understood.
And epic, you know? It felt very watching the original Star Wars and feeling like this is a movement, something's happening. It felt like watching The Matrix back when it came out. It was like, I've never seen this shit before.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I agree with you about the Wonder Woman thing, because my chief complaint with that movie was the fact that they left Themyscira.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I loved the fact that Black Panther, except for, you know, the opening scenes, you know, in the UK where we're introduced to Killmonger, and then the scene where they have to go and retrieve the vibranium in South Korea, we stayed in Wakanda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was showing you how the entire world that Coogler created for the movie could function by itself. And you didn't need to be like a action movie where you're zipping around the world. I mean, it felt realer than movies that are set in New York and film in New York. And like you can see like bits of New York and everything. It's like they just made it feel like a real country.
Yeah.
And I want to say the cinematography specifically is a triumph, and the woman responsible for it is Rachel Morrison, who is the first ever female Oscar nominee for cinematography for Mudbound this year. So maybe she should be president.
If she doesn't win for Mudbound, like, she needs... This movie needs nominations.
Also, can you...
Like, the way Get Out got nominations.
Can you believe that when you actually have diversity in filmmaking, it begets more diversity? Like, wow, the black man actually hired a woman. Funny how that works. You don't have to, like, create 13 programs to interject women and people of color into shit. If you actually just hire them to do jobs, it turns out they'll hire other non-white dudes. Groundbreaking.
I need more proof.
And also, gas. Rachel is white, too.
Yeah.
Like, and she did the damn thing. And she did it on Mudbound. Like, I don't know who this white woman is, like, running around making all these black people look great in movies. But
this Julie Bowen and Jumping the Broom. Showing up with her white antics.
And they looked unbelievable. I mean, Lupita looked like a snack. She just was glowing. I was like, this is the most beautiful woman living on this planet right now.
Truly, what was the last movie where not only was there a black ensemble, but I would say between 5 and 10 of the characters are individually iconic, you know, like given specific, like they're cohesive as characters, they all belong in the same universe, but they also are just, each one of them is a different kind of, like, you know, American Gladiator sized, you know, huge iconic look.
Moment.
Down to Angela Bassett, you know,
who doesn't even get to, she doesn't even have much to say, but she just is regal, and you feel it, you know, with like every scene she's in, she just sort of imbues with. Ugh, and when she took off those
headdress,
and you saw her
white dreads.
Yes.
Ugh, it was almost, honestly, during that movie, it was at times it was too much. I was like, don't give me any more. I can't handle it.
Michael B. Jordan taking off his shirt.
Oof.
Chadwick taking off. I'm like, Winston Duke.
right.
Everyone, every man, every woman.
Unbelievable.
Were you surprised, by the way, that Black Panther, the character, basically ceded the movie to supporting characters for a time.
And,
like, he disappears for a while.
And women.
Yeah.
Like, can I just say also, they're really the only ones in that movie who were really helping everybody out. Like, he beat Killmonger mainly because he had, like, 4 bad bitches who were actually doing their jobs and, like, kicking everyone's ass.
When Denai was like,
oh my god,
she confronted
amazing.
Daniel Kaluuya,
like, that rhino,
yes,
that giant dino rhino thing.
You would kill me, my love.
He's like, yeah, bitch, easily.
He's great in it. I liked Daniel Kaluuya in Get Out, but I feel like he really popped in this movie.
Yeah, he like bulked up. He was.
Because Get Out was more of like he was playing, you know, like the lead in like a slasher movie. You know,
yeah,
he's basically just running around.
The Mia Farrow and Rosemary's Baby. Yeah. He's like the sort of cipher through which we see the movie.
Yeah, yeah. But in this, he was a character.
Yeah, I was very disappointed in him. The whole time, I just kept saying, Daniel, I am so disappointed in you. I don't know what the hell you think you were
making
doing right
now. Making bad choices.
Making terrible choices. Just like he didn't Get Out. I was like, you in the woods with those white people?
Right.
Like, you're going with this dude, homie? Like, Daniel, you need to get it together.
What else?
And then
is
a woman
say?
Got you together, yes, in the end.
I think there were more women with speaking roles in this movie than there have been in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in general.
I can't think of another one that would compete.
There were no, Lupita was no Natalie Portman in Thor. She was even more lively than like a Pepper Potts, like Gwyneth was in the Iron Man movie. It's like, she was doing her own damn thing in the beginning of the movie,
right,
liberating kidnapped women,
yeah,
and boys put into like war, and Chadwick fucked it.
Yeah.
Black Panther fucked it up for her. I love that she's doing her own thing. Letitia Wright, we didn't even talk about her,
oh my
how
God.
Good she is.
She may as well have just thrown a pile of headshots at the audience because she is going to book and book and book after this. Everything about her was addictive. She had the, like just that contagious, gregarious comedy energy that
so
didn't
funny.
Feel too comic relief-y. It felt like it belonged and it was social with those people in a particular way. It was
she's
super cool.
She's the smartest person there.
Mm-hmm.
She was the smartest person,
yeah,
we saw on screen.
It was nice seeing a young black woman, yeah, who was, you know, smart, funny, joking around with her older brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just felt, ugh.
Fixing white boys.
There's no misery in the movie.
No.
Right.
No, it was...
And they even gave the white audience a little something-something. If you stayed till the end credits and saw Bucky come out, you know, in his African robe,
yeah,
finally fixed after Captain America's Civil War, I was like, you know, Sebastian Stan can get it too.
But that's the, but that's the whole thing, right? Because that was one of the narratives behind Black Panther, where they're like, are white people going to go see black people do things? And, like, are other people, like, overseas, as if there aren't black people, by the way, outside of the United States.
First of all, our screening was full of white people.
Our screening was full of white people. And so the
getting
whole,
their lives.
Loving it. So it's like, yeah, if it's a good movie, people will go enjoy the movie. And also, it was marketed properly. So that's one of the other things where, like, there was an incredible marketing push behind Black Panther. So, like, when you're putting money into it, you're investing in it being successful. Crazy how it actually ends up being successful.
Made a shit ton of money globally, which, if you're talking about Black Panther, you know, respect to 20 years ago, Blade came out, which was great, and starred Wesley Snipes. And he said in a recent interview with Aisha Harris on Slate just about the fact that even back then, you know, the executives were shocked that it was so big overseas, like in Japan and everything. And I'm
which,
like, people want to see this shit. I'm like, first of all, people are wearing black shit everywhere.
Also, have you ever been, like, the NBA in China is, like, one of the most popular things happening. Like, these random-ass basketball players in the United States can go to China, and they're the biggest celebrities. So the idea that, like, the rest of the world isn't down with black shit, as if, like... Anytime I feel like I'm out of the country and it's just like people asking about, like, do you know Beyonce? It's like, no, God. I mean, I wish. But like, it feels ahistorical. It's like, there's no anecdotes really to support that. And like, how many times do we have to put this on a project to be like, well, this is going to be the one that proves that like black people or women can sell movie tickets and be successful?
Great. And it's 2018. Like, you need a bigger push for movies beyond just a trailer.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you need to get people excited to see it. I mean
Girls Trip had a crazy push, and
yeah,
the movie did really well. Like, it's not a coincidence that marketing works.
Right. And whereas Moonlight did bigger than Call Me By Your Name, which is doing kind of poorly,
yeah, right,
in theaters because Sony, I don't think they put anything behind it.
Nor did they, like, target
people
the LGBT audience enough.
People
they didn't,
aren't being excited for this movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it's bizarrely annoying. Like, all of my gay friends only care about that movie, basically, this year. And yet, still, it feels like Carly Rae Jepsen's emotion. It didn't go beyond the WeHo sphere.
Is there anything else to say about Black Panther?
The music, by the way, is so propulsive and specific to the movie. And again, adds to the feeling of there's a specific feel to this movie. Again, I can't think of another superhero movie. Like, The Dark Knight had some grit to it. You know, Thor Ragnarok had a kind of zany comic energy, but this, to me, is coasting on its own sort of mouthfeel and, you know, verve.
Each character felt real, too.
Yes.
Killmonger felt as real as T'Challa in motivation. It had a lot to say about Black culture.
I think you can,
and history.
You can also tell, which, you know, it's sort of the twice as good to get half as much. Like, clearly everyone involved in this movie was like, this has to be incredible. There's so much writing. They will never make a Black superhero movie again if Black Panther had not done well. And I feel like you can tell everyone rolled up to that. Like, every PA rolled up to that movie like, oh, shit, we're going to do the best possible job we can do with everything. Kendrick was like, I'm going to do the best possible job with this soundtrack that I can do, and everyone really cared and knew that, like, they had to bring it for this movie to be successful, and you can feel that hard work and that care for the project, I feel like, in every component.
Definitely. Lastly, I just feel like, I read a bit about this for the Daily Beast, but I feel like what I loved in the movie is the discussion between Black Americans and Black Africans, and I like that conversation, mm-hmm. and I hope we keep having it. Mm-hmm. And the perfect movie to do that for is Storm, because she is part Nigerian and part American. So let's make it happen.
Can I root for Carmen Ejogo in that movie?
To play her?
I would say yes to that.
Is she too light? How does she look?
I really need
a dark-skinned Storm. She's
like
Black.
A brown skin.
Yeah, brown skin.
You By know? The way, I
was
wanna...
thinking like Tiana Paris.
Ooh.
Or,
that'd be... Mm. It's hard because you need somebody who's not already in the superhero universe, right? You want to bring somebody new in, yeah.
Right, because the actress in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
She's playing Domino in Deadpool, so it's like, you know, you need to find someone who hasn't been scooped up already. What I also loved about the film and all of the turnout is that a group called the Electoral Justice Project, which is an arm of the Movement for Black Lives organization, it got people registered to vote at screenings of the movie.
Brilliant.
Which, Black people are showing up in droves. Mm-hmm. Why not also use this movie, you know, to be like an extra fuck you to Trump and the GOP come 2018.
Black people and then sensible white people who went and saw the movie. It's like, that's who we need voting.
Also, for some reason that didn't naturally occur to me. It's like, yeah, these people are like supercharged to be here and feeling empowered. Why wouldn't you register to vote there? That's exactly what I would feel like doing there, you know?
Because the biggest problem that it comes with voting, particularly like in the Black community, is that there's always this sense of powerlessness. And like, I remember that trying to get people to register for the 2016 election. You know, this idea that your vote won't matter, that there's a corrupt system, and looking at the entirety of Trump's administration, they weren't wrong.
Right.
You know, like, flagrant shit happens every day and nobody does anything about it. So how do you empower voters when it feels like the president can commit crimes daily and the GOP, Paul Ryan, aren't going to hold him responsible? You get people energized and wanting to harness their power. And I think that having people register to vote at this movie in a moment where, you know, just Black people were feeling good about themselves and their representation and what they can do in the future.
And it's kind of a political movie.
The movie is about politics.
Yeah, it all
it's about synergy. It's about how we're all one as Black people. You know, and we need to go
the Wakanda
there.
National Congress. Somebody should run on that ticket.
Rachel Dolezal is already drafting up.
She's trying to get a lunch date in Wakanda right now. Can I get
it should be illegal to even say her name during February.
She booked a plane ticket to Wakanda. And
showed up at the airport.
And the airport was like, you know what, girl, we'll take your money. She is still at LAX waiting.
Oh, you know what? I should add what I think one of the coolest things about this movie is a lot of the dialogue is about this Black culture talking about how should we harness our power and use it. It's just like a cool, awesome, relevant conversation. Should we be isolationist? Should we share? You know, it's anyway.
And it's people having conversations in an action movie instead of just dumb dialogue that, you know, could be plopped into any superhero movie, and you wouldn't be able to tell
you could have
by
the sound
looking
off.
At the script.
Yeah. You could have the sound off in Thor and be like, I get what's happening. in this movie.
By the way, I'd like to reiterate that I hate superhero movies. For me to be this effusive is very telling, and it almost shouldn't be recorded. I feel so incriminated liking something. A movie like this.
We also told Lewis he had to love Black Panther.
Right.
we wouldn't have allowed anything else.
Lewis just wants to watch ordinary people on loop for eternity.
And also,
that's your version of The Good Place.
Oh my God. Every week I come here with my dignity and I leave shattered.
When we come back, speaking of shattered dignity, Fergie. Fergie Ferg, what's happening, baby?
T-A-S-T-E-Y.
Do you remember when Fergie spelled tasty that way?
Wait, how did she spell it?
T-A-S-T-E-Y in Fergalicious.
Oh, the song goes T to the A to the S-T-E-Y, girl, you tasty.
Oh, no.
So, Fergie's back in the news because she sang the national anthem at the NBA All-Star Game, and it was a sight.
Yeah. It was something.
So at first it starts out, you know, she's giving you a little Billie Holiday.
Then she's giving you Eartha Kitt Has Been Impaled.
At the twilight's last
gleaming. She goes in.
Oh, Lord. And bright stars. This accent she suddenly adopted.
I think it's still her accent from Nine. Okay, that's enough.
Oof. Can I say, hearing it in these headphones is so much more painful. Like, that hurt me just now.
I don't know.
Well, first of all, it's like a very real display of that particular Fergie, I'll call it sexuality, which is just, she's always been like half pop star, half Kirstie Alley, just like a blowsy dame. And like the timbre of her voice,
a parody of a film noir.
Yes. Yeah. And she also, there's like a weird raw Linda Hamilton quality to her too. Just no one is like her. But that doesn't mean it's always right. And I can't, it's just like, we've never thought of her as a balladeer before. You know, Big Girls Don't Cry isn't much of a vocal. You know?
I think someone wrote online that the problem isn't that Fergie can't sing, is that she has no taste.
Yeah.
No. Because I'm listening to that, I'm like, I've heard her sing, she can sing, but for some reason she decided that this
Jessica Rabbit ass
boogie like, woogie rendition. Bugle boy whale was appropriate. I don't know how Trump and Taffeta Lauren weren't tweeting immediately, because honestly this feels worse than kneeling during the national anthem. Well,
I don't understand how she even got there, because more than one person heard her do that before she got up there and did it. Like, there is a group of people aware that she was going to go up and do exactly that.
Did she bait and switch?
I don't think so. There's footage of her rehearsing.
Yeah, they had to arrange it.
They had to arrange it. There's a bunch of people who knew that that was going to happen. And the fact that no one stepped in, not that it's not her fault. I mean, it's all, you know, she did this to herself. But I am wondering how no one else said, I don't know, girl, maybe try it another way.
Right. Maybe you're not Marvin Gaye.
There's been a lot of questioning, too, about sort of what's happening to Fergie lately in the wake of her divorce from Josh Duhamel. But I would posit that this is the Fergie we've always had.
Yes. No, she's been, I think you just nailed it, like, pretty tacky. Let's think about the Black Eyed Peas for a second. I believe that music was a series of kazoos and jackhammers that we propelled to number one every time. I mean, you want to talk about a precursor to Trump? There it is right there. Because it's pure noise.
I was in West Hollywood on Sunday, and Let's Get It Started played. And you know what?
You should be slapped to the floor.
I was into it. I was very into it.
Very into it?
You know what? I like Black Eyed Peas. I'm going to go on record as liking the Black Eyed Peas music, but I feel like hate some of their bigger singles.
It has not aged well. Their music has not aged well because
No. They have to play the edited version of Let's Get It Started because the album version is called Let's Get Retarded.
It's such an offense. It's horrible.
Okay in 2003.
Do you know what else we thought was okay? Just to be clear, this is a woman who was on a kids' television show in the 80s. Her name is Stacey Ferguson.
Incorporated.
This is somebody who has sung lyrics, Them Chickens Jockin' My Style. We just thought, of course. Duh, Fergie, you can do that.
I was rewatching clips of her wailing to a Rolling Stones song on Good Morning America, doing one-handed flips on the stage at 8 in the fucking morning. Like, this is the Fergie we have always had.
Guys, you must see this clip of her doing Today's Show cartwheels. You've never seen anything like it unless you have a toddler. Because it is wild.
Also, do you remember her crashing the Trevor Project live?
No.
Months, like,
how many gay lives did she accidentally ruin?
Armie Hammer was talking, and she just showed up at the podium and took it from him and started doing this weird, like, call me by your name joke where she said, I'm Armie Hammer, and, like, was calling him Fergie. And then she talked about Tom Ford, who was being honored at the gala, and started telling people to buy the Target version of her latest album, Double Duchess.
Oh. You know what, Fergie girl? You can call me. We'll get some rosé and we will talk. We will have a chat because you need it.
Do you want Scandal, Fergie? Like, yeah, we can have a Scandal and Pasta night.
And, like, no judgment. I'll make you some pasta. But we have some things to talk about, clearly.
I do like her recent single, You Already Know, with Nicki Minaj. I thought that was a tight song. And also, of course, barely a song, like everything Fergie has ever done.
Honestly, her solo music has aged better than the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
You know, Glamorous, Big Girls Don't Cry, still bops.
You know who loves Glamorous? Straight women. I'm telling you, that is their car jam. Ask any of them.
You got one right here.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Am I right?
Straight women.
Sure. Look at you. You have a tear in your eye. I can see it.
Straight women, if you love the song Glamorous, go to straightwomenloveglamorous.com/keepit. Let us know your thoughts. When we're back, more Omarosa.
Did you ever sleep with him?
With who?
Well,
hell no. Oh my God, Brandy, that's horrible.
Apparently a lot of girls do.
Well, I'm not. Now there is somebody in the way who's sleeping around with everybody, but she is not me.
No, okay.
I've never had to do that.
No, but I've been told when I was on Apprentice that a few girls prior to my
Tell
season.
Me who.
I don't know.
Oh, you know the scoop, Brandy.
Wait, hold on. That Celebrity Apprentice contestants slept with.
But you've never heard my name. Tell the truth.
No.
Ever.
No, but he seems to like you so much. I was just wondering.
God, no. No, I'm just, ratings go, that's what.
Yeah.
People throw that out when they don't have anything left else to attack you for. You know what I mean? When you're friends with a guy and you're close and you hear, oh, they must be.
Right. But I mean, like, just his reputation in that situation.
God, that is disgusting.
Kara, I know you love so much when we talk about Omarosa on this show.
Yeah.
But Celebrity Big Brother is still going on, and Keep It fans demand it.
Do they?
Maybe. I know Lewis and I are still watching.
I literally have a frozen giant grin on my face. Getting ready for this.
Lewis, you're still watching Celebrity Big Brother.
I'm a human being, aren't I?
Yeah,
yes, of course I am.
For some reason, Omarosa is still in the house.
How many are left?
Like
seven people.
But now they're doing the thing where they eliminate two per episode because it's such an abbreviated run.
She was up on the block against Keisha Knight Pulliam. And Keisha, who is a single mom, asked everyone to vote her out because her breast milk was depleted and she needed to get home to feed her child.
And she didn't know that was going to happen.
I am pretty sure CBS deposited a nice check into her Chase account and was like, you need to leave.
We're not
losing Omarosa.
There's no way Omarosa should still be in the house. It really feels, I'm now thinking back to the first week in which magically they drew a chip and Omarosa got immunity, you know, for a week. Like, they need this. She is what makes this a moment, not just
a
waste of space.
She's the only reason we're watching.
Didn't Keisha know, like, the breastfeeding thing? You knew you left your child. There was a, that you wouldn't be able to breastfeed your child from the house.
She was pumping, and I guess they were delivering the milk to her baby.
Yeah, so what changed?
She said that she started losing her milk.
What? Listen, I mean, okay, I've never breastfed, but that doesn't sound to me.
It sounds about as sound as an asthma attack, where you... I'm back. So this week, Omarosa continued to spill tea about the White House because she is goosing us all up for that memoir. She talked about how Mike Pence is worse than Trump because he thinks Jesus speaks to him. And then there was a moment where Brandy Glanville asked her point blank if she ever slept with Trump.
I'm now thinking about Celebrity Apprentice contestants sleeping with him. Say it isn't so, Sharon Osbourne. Get off him.
LaToya Jackson, yeah. What did you do?
Nadia Comaneci, don't do it.
Oh, God. What a mess. What the hell is this?
Aren't you riveted?
I'm something. Also, can I say, her initial denial did not sound very real. I was like, huh?
What?
You're crazy, Brandy. Like, I don't know, girl. That doesn't sound that convincing.
I also love how she said that that's the first insult people go to when they don't have anything else to say. While she was like, I'm not sleeping with Trump, but there is somebody fucking everybody in the White House, and she's not me. And specified it's a she, so.
Also, that's not the first insult people throw at Omarosa. I mean, crazy, conniving, a liar. There is a long
dark
list
Stacey
of things.
Dark Stacey Dash.
There's a long list of insults we can get to before maybe slept with Donald Trump.
I'm, by the way.
Because no one thinks about that.
No.
I don't want to think about Donald Trump touching anybody.
Right.
I'm sick to death of people treating her soundbites as if they are notable or insightful. She truly sounds like she is wikiing the Trump White House to come up with takes. She's like, well, Mike Pence is bad. And
right.
Also, you won't believe this, there are other bad people there.
What I'm loving is the fact that each soundbite is like running on Us Weekly. It's running on MSNBC. Like, Omarosa says, Mike Pence is bad. It's like, these are things that people tweet.
Yeah. Or say at like a dinner party. You know.
It's not
new information. I wake up in the morning and say, Mike Pence sucks. That's just, I immediately am awake in the morning. That's the first thing.
Right. It's like a vitamin.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, well, Adam Rippon, thank you for joining us this week. Yeah, so it's, I don't know. I'm loving.
How much more is left of this?
She has
less than a week.
What's the prize? Like, what do you get when you win this?
I think we won already, existing.
Yeah.
You know what I will say, though? Again, if we're talking a gameplay angle. So she had to nominate people because she was the head of household or whatever, and she threw off the entire house by purposely winking at a contestant she had no alliance with, and that made everybody believe that she was arranging some P.T. Barnum-like spectacle behind their backs. And that was pretty exciting. Because Omarosa also just loves that shit.
She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, right.
I can't wait for the memoir. We are going to do a dramatic reading of the entire thing on this show.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Carol, the Calamity Apprentice. That's the name of the book.
Carol will kill me. Keep It is coming up next. And our favorite part of the week is here. It's Keep It. Carol, why don't you go first?
So my Keep It, I'm going to stay on theme. Black Panther came out and Chris Brown tweeted something. And he said something like, congratulations on Black Panther, and included a picture of him photoshopped as Black Panther. Also, he's wearing sunglasses. So I was like, I feel like you don't understand how this costume works because I don't know how you're getting that mask on with sunglasses. But it's hard to even continue to talk about Chris Brown because it's just...
What is he on lately? Didn't he recently tweet at Bruno Mars, Beyonce, and Rihanna and say,
yes,
us together would be a dope concert.
Two for one, as if he's comparable. What he is saying is he is a comparable substitute for Bruno Mars. If it's like a two for one situation. He, I mean, obviously he's not always well, but that in particular, it was like he hadn't even seen the movie. Why are you, you're congratulating someone on Black Panther by putting yourself in Black Panther? It's like, so that's not the movie, dude. You're not congratulating Chadwick. Who are you congratulating? Yourself? On photoshopping yourself into a Black Panther outfit. And it was confusing, and he tires me.
I would love to just tweet people out of my league. Like, wouldn't it be fun if we all hang out? Like, Justin Timberlake tweeting at, like, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison. Yeah. Hey, guys, the four of us.
Justin Timberlake tweeting at the NSYNC members at this point.
Yeah.
Lewis?
I read BuzzFeed all the time, but my keep it this week is to BuzzFeed. They had this quiz about the new Queer Eye. Which Queer Eye member are you? Ira and I were at the premiere of the new Queer Eye. We loved the episode we saw. It was really fabulous. Like all the new cast members. And then full disclosure, my friend Jonathan is the hair guy on this show. And he did Gay of Thrones on Funny or Die, if you remember that. I was on an episode. Anyway.
All right.
If you get Jonathan.
Christina Milian with the promo. Keep it moving.
You know what I say about Christina Milian? Christina Brilliant. Moving on.
No one says that.
Well, here we go. If you take this quiz and you get Jonathan, who's the, you know, kind of sassy hair gay, part of the description for him says, you know, you have a wonderful personality. It might not be for everybody, but you know what I'm done with? People telling gay people whose personalities are palatable for everybody else. It reminds me of every time you read a comedy review of someone like Amy Schumer or Kathy Griffin or something. There's always like a caveat, might not be for everyone. What you actually mean is it might put off straight men. And it's coded language and it's disgusting. And I've spent my whole life sussing this shit out. And you really need to fucking watch it because it is super offensive and gross. So thanks. And by the way, Jonathan fucking rules on that show. So
he is great.
I love him. And the internet loves Anthony,
who has a symmetrical smile. And I believe that got him the gig.
Yeah.
I say that affectionately. He also makes guac. I also make guac and have no skills. So that's shocking.
My keep it is, as the Black Panther weekend was happening and we were all celebrating, I also want to remind people that while the Trump administration has been dodging, you know, all this Rob Porter drama and everything else happening, they've also been slowly like rolling back and dismantling LGBT health initiatives. And I think we've all, you know, gotten over the fact that Trump pretended he was like the most LGBT friendly because that's what he always does. I'm the least collusive with Russia. But, you know, he has just slowly been hiring anti-LGBT people to run, you know, his health administration. And I think that the people who always get affected by this end up being LGBT people of color and trans women of color. And I just would like for our gay organizations like the HRC and GLAAD, I know that they, you know, usually only do things that rich white people want them to do when they give a bunch of money, or they're very excited about Britney Spears showing up to their gala, and that's what they tweet about all the time, or how cute Gus Kentworthy looks at the Olympics this week. But I would really love them in this year, in this era, to, you know, to start focusing on getting people of color and trans people on their boards and actually start doing something for a lot of our communities. I know GLAAD actually does, you know, a bit more than the HRC does, but that visibility isn't there. And when people of color don't think of these groups as being for them, they think that the only place they can get help, you know, is like their local LGBT center. I think something's wrong there. And I think we need to be a lot more vocal about how this stuff is affecting people. And that's it. What?
No, nothing.
That was just true.
Yeah, it was very true.
I'm
not
going to add a quip to that.
Yeah, no.
I can be serious sometimes.
It was profound.
I mean, don't do it again, but yeah.
Never.
That was your one moment of sincerity.
This has been Keep It. Thank you, Kara. Thank you, Lewis, for being here again, I guess. Black History Month's almost over.
We
have one more week, and I guarantee Lewis will not be here. I've set up traps. Just like Wile E. Coyote.
Like Martin Freeman in Wakanda, I hold on.
We'll see you next week. We're gearing up for Oscar season, so joining me today is Travell Anderson, a reporter from the LA Times, and we're going to talk a bit about diversity in entertainment journalism. We are here at Oprah's Legends Ball with LA Times reporter Travell Anderson.
Hello, darling.
How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Thank you for coming on in. I feel great.
Wonderful.
Oscar season is here. Yeah. We're in the middle of it.
I'm so ready for it to be over.
Are you?
Yeah, because it's longer this year than normal because of the Olympics messing things up.
That's right. They extended it a week.
Yes. That week matters.
So tell me a bit about reporting during this season, especially working at the LA Times. You're here in the thick of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, diversity is the name of the game. It's been the name of the game for the last few years. And mm-hmm. So, and that's my thing. That's my area of expertise, I guess. And so we're paying attention to what storylines may pop up out of the awards show and the entire season. You know, Me Too has been having a moment. Get Out and Lady Bird seem to be representative of a future that we all want in Hollywood. And so it's interesting, you know, just on these carpets, trying to look fabulous, trying to do a fabulous job. It's a mess.
But, and you always look great on the carpet.
You know, I try.
Sometimes a heel.
You know, always a heel, okay? Because we don't play and the picture has to be popping.
Tell me a bit what that's been like for you reporting on the red carpet, you know, obviously just being you, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because there aren't many black folk, period, on the carpet. Right?
At all.
Like, literally. Like, either on my side where the press are or the other side where the talent is. And so it's been interesting over the last few years just to see, at least on the talent side, it become a more diverse space. Mm-hmm. But as far as me doing my job, like, it's interesting. It's one of those things where it ends up being a benefit because people remember that, you know, black person with the lipstick and the fingernails and the big hair from the LA Times. And so it helps me in terms of getting people to stop, you know.
Right. So they may remember you from when they talked to you before.
Exactly. So I'll see them, you know, at the Golden Globes or at the SAG Awards earlier in the season. And then they'll see me again at mm-hmm. these other award shows in between. And it becomes and builds a little bit of a relationship throughout award season that mm-hmm. really helps in terms of coverage.
But as you said, there's really not a lot happening on the other side of the carpet. You know, I remember that conversation. It was after the Globes mm-hmm. where a reporter asked Sterling K. Brown about diversity mm-hmm. in the newsroom and diversity of black people reporting on other black people.
Yeah.
And there was even another reporter who contacted Darren Criss on social media
because
she wasn't invited to the American Crime Story Versace event. Are you noticing things like that where you just feel, you know, like you're the only one there? You feel like, I guess you work at the LA Times, so the access is probably there because you are.
Right. I'm lucky. I have immense privilege to work at, you know, the LA Times and, you know, when I call or when I send an email, I get a response, right? Mm-hmm. However, you know, we're also kind of having this conversation out of Sundance where there are very few black people in the rooms, mm-hmm. but like there's a lot of diversity on screen. And so it's this question of we're having this diversity moment in the industry, but the people who are commenting on it aren't diverse themselves. And so you have a lot of reporters and a lot of journalists of a variety of stripes. Some work for, you know, minority or niche type publications, some do not. Mm-hmm. But everyone's asking the question, what is next in this diversity conversation? I think representation in terms of our newsrooms is part of that conversation. So it's interesting for me. Like I said, I don't have the access issues, but I do have issues that someone who does have access issues might have. And so what I mean by that is like, so at Sundance, you know, I'm standing in a line, we're waiting to go into a movie theater, and, you know, I'm the only black person in line. There's a lot of white people in front of me and a lot of black people behind me. They start letting us in the theater and we have our badges or whatever the case may be, right? And they're letting everybody in through. They're like just glancing at the badges. I get stopped. Mm-hmm. No one else got stopped. I don't know why I got stopped. Mm-hmm. It could be a variety of different reasons, right? But what we do know is that there's an expectation of the type of person that has the type of access that I have, mm-hmm. and I don't represent that, right?
Yeah.
When I walk into a particular room to do an interview, the celebrity, no matter what their race is or who they are, they're always surprised to see me walk through the door.
Yes.
Partly because, you know, I'm black, but also partly because I'm so fabulous and I usually have on a heel and my nails are done and all this other stuff. And so it's like, begging the question of what do we believe journalists should look like, mm-hmm. And why we feel that way.
Exactly. No, I've even run into some of that because my access has changed depending on where I've been, mm-hmm. You know, because I've been at the Daily Beast, mm-hmm. I've been at New York Magazine and MTV and BuzzFeed. So it's, I've seen how you're treated at different places,
right,
depending which outlet,
yeah,
you're working at. And I've definitely experienced that same thing. I remember, I think I interviewed Diddy for something once, and he was like, oh, it was a string of white people coming in. Didn't expect to see you.
But seriously, yeah, though, and there are a number of celebrities, particularly those of color, who you see on their face kind of the breath of fresh air you end up being when the people that they're interviewing aren't, or that are interviewing them, rather, don't look like them. And when they're doing that in a long press day and you walk in the door, it changes the interview. It changes their energy. And, like, that's a benefit that I think newsrooms should be looking at when it comes to who they're employing, particularly on staff, but also on the freelance basis, to do these types of things.
So, big movie this week, Black Panther, just came out.
Yes.
And what did you notice about the Black Panther rollout? Because you would expect that there would be beaucoup de black journalists there because it's Black Panther. Mm-hmm. There's so much diversity, mm-hmm. on screen. Everyone is pushing the fact that there's Africans, African-Americans, mm-hmm. you know, there's Ryan Coogler directing, there's black people behind the scenes working, and then...
I will say this. The premiere, I was graced the opportunity to attend the wonderful premiere.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about it.
Sorry about it. but the press line for the premiere was a lot more diverse than press lines have been in the past. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those outlets that were invited to the press line weren't given tickets to the premiere. It's like they were invited to cover the premiere, but you couldn't come in to see the movie. Mm. And then the press day, which was the day after the premiere, one of the two press days after the premiere, when I arrived at about 1 o'clock, I didn't see any black people, you know, waiting in the little media center at the hotel they were doing the press room at. So I think we've seen a lot of coverage coming about Black Panther from a lot of these, you know, black girl nerds type organizations and outlets and things like that. I'm unsure of what their actual access has been. Like, I don't know if they've been able to get to talk to the stars, right?
Right.
Have you been able to talk to Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick Boseman and Ryan Coogler? Or are they throwing you no shade, but those no-name folk that are in the background?
Right.
Just to say that they, you know, let the black people at the table to do an interview. Like, I had a black reporter who, like, DM'd me because she was trying to get credentials to come to the premiere to cover the carpet. We're good friends. We went to school together. And she's like, hey, like, are you in conversation with Marvel folks about this film? Like, I want to cover the premiere. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm in conversation with them. She's like, I can't get them to respond to me. I can't get them to respond to an email. We eventually were able to work it out because I know some of the people at the studio. I'm like, hey, respond to this girl's email. Even if you're going to tell her no, respond to the email. But that's the thing. A lot of people just can't even get an email response, let alone get actual access to cover these things that they should be able to.
And that ties into how people perceive discussions around films happening during Oscar season. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Sundance, and there's Venice and Tribeca and all sorts of other festivals where films like A Three Billboards will air, will screen, and people may love it, you know? And then when people of color get the opportunity to see it, they might not like it, and somehow it's described as backlash when it's, no, I just saw the film.
I just got time. I just got access to cover this film. It reminds me of when Nate Parker's The Birth of a Nation premiered at Sundance.
Listen, if black people had seen that movie, there wouldn't have been this whole multi-million dollar sale, people being, you know, exalting Nate Parker, and then this great fall because of the rape case, because I was like, you know what, I'm still going to go see this movie so I can write about it. I went to see it at the, because I wasn't invited to a screening, probably because at that point it was a disaster. But, you know, I went to see it at a little theater in Silver Lake on opening day. I walked out of that theater like, what did I just watch?
I did the exact same thing. And I was like, this is how you know that there weren't any, or and if there were some, there weren't enough people of color, black folk in particular, in this screening, with the access to this screening, to say, actually, this isn't as good as you all are trying to make it out to be for XYZ reasons.
Right, because someone I won't mention has, you know, I think a live journal blog about films, talked about how she was confused about the sort of racial conversation happening with Three Billboards, mm-hmm. specifically because two African-American critics associations named it their mm-hmm. best films of the year. Mm-hmm. And not even getting into the issue of which black critics are in that, mm-hmm. What's the generation gap between yeah. them? Because, younger people might see a film differently the way older people are. What are the access of the people in that Film Critics Association? Because Detroit was also on that list. Mm-hmm. So it's like, are they the type of people who want to rock the boat? Are they right. the type of people who want to pick a film that they think, you know, is going to get Oscar accolades? So
right. And it's a little, it's that. A balance of that, yeah. right? Like you want, and I hate to say this, but oftentimes when you are at
if you think a film is going to be number one.
Right. You want to say that you had that film also on your list of top films, and you want to say that, hey, we gave this person an award before the Oscars gave that person an award. Mm-hmm. And to be clear, I think Frances McDormand does a great job in the film.
She's amazing.
The film itself, however, is questionable for yeah. a number of reasons. And I think that's, to your point, there's this interplay and there's this conversation happening right now about, you know, these films and what they mean and who's being able to see them. And the importance is having a diversity of people being able to see these films, not just the folks who are in certain black critics organizations, because like you said, that's a certain type of black person, that's a certain mm-hmm. type of black critic who has a certain type of access or who has been in the industry for a certain length right. of time.
You've either been in the industry or you have sort of an access to white areas right. that other critics don't have. It's rare that you'll see a critic like my friend and colleague Kelly Carter, mm-hmm. who works at The Undefeated now, but she has a long history yes. of working in the media. And even then, she and I have had conversations where it's studios or places you at work would send her the invites for the black films.
And only the black
films.
But
only the black films. Yes. It's like my inbox is always blowing up mm-hmm. when something with Biggie and Tupac is right. happening.
Oh my God. Or the latest Tyler Perry movie. Right. Right. They're like, we gotta get the black people in the room for this one right here. Okay.
I have thoughts about Phantom Thread. I loved it.
It was cute.
Yeah.
It was cute.
I personally loved it. They could have had my quote on the poster. Because I keep going on about that movie. Where ultimately do we start doing something about this? You know, is this a thing where news guilds is something that is going to help us? Mm-hmm. And is it something where the black people in news guilds at these legacy places need to start having the conversation, hey, it's great that we're getting the pay and the vacation time and the stuff that we want, but now let's start talking about equal representation and the access that people of color in this guild don't get.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's important. I think, you know, I have to give a small plug for NABJ, National Association of Black Journalists. I'm the Los Angeles chapter president. One of the things we're having conversations about is how we can be of more support to the freelancers, to the people who aren't at these big media organizations and who don't have the immense access, so that we can ensure and use our sources and our resources and support to say, hey, we already know that more people need to be at the table, need to be in the rooms, need to have mm-hmm. access to this, but having more tangible things that we can do. So whether that's, you know, me, I always try to do when I'm having conversations with studio publicists, I always try to send them a couple other black folks or brown folks or queer folks that I think they need to send an invite to. Mm-hmm. That's something I personally do. And I think on an organizational level, the news guilds, the black journalist associations, the other journalist serving organizations, there's more we can do and should be doing around this conversation.
And tell people who might be aspiring journalists, freelance journalists, how they can get involved in NABJ.
Yes, so NABJ, we are an advocacy organization for black journalists and for emerging journalists, and we support college students with scholarships and all of that. You can find more information on our website at nabj-la.org, or follow us on Twitter at NABJLA official. We have a meeting every third Saturday of the month, and we just want to be here to support people in terms of doing the type of work that they want to do.
Yes, you know, and look it up. There's also the exact same organizations for Latino, Hispanic,
yes. National
and
Hispanic,
Asian journalists as well.
National Hispanic Journalists Association, the Asian American Journalists Association, the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association. There's one for whatever identity you may have, as well as Online News Association for digital journalists. There's Visual Journalists Organization. There's something out there for everyone. Find these organizations and use their resources to get you to the place you want to be.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Trezara.
Not a problem. Thank you, darling.
I want to thank Kara Lewis and Travell Anderson from the LA Times for joining me today. That's been Keep It. We'll see you next week.
This is somebody who has sung lyrics, Them Chickens Jockin' My Style. We just thought, of course. Duh, Fergie, you can do that.